Good afternoon, my people. Welcome
back.
How
are y'all doing?
Well, I stepped all over you right there.
It's all right.
Kev wants to know how y'all are doing. Welcome back to Two Dope Teachers and a Mic. My name is Gerardo Munoz.
It is your boy, Kevin Adams.
Not just your boy, all of our boy. That's our boy right there.
I'm your boy.
And
that's my boy.
That's my boy right there. That's my boy.
better get your boy.
Better get your boy. That's what it turns into. I saw a great meme of these two old lady teachers, and they both had t-shirts on, and one said, "I get in trouble," and the other said, "I get us out of trouble."
There you go. That's what you need.
That's what we have, bro. I feel like I get us in trouble and you get us out of trouble. Like,
that's right.
Yeah. What you mean that's right?
That's right. That's how it feels. Yo. I'm like, oh no, here we go again. Zany adventure.
I've got this sort of like scene that plays out in my head where I'm like, I bet that Kev spends a lot of time behind the scenes translating for me. Like, okay. So what Gerardo meant, what he meant, here's what he's a good dude.
Yeah, calm down. Okay.
Here's where he's coming from.
I see how you're worked up, but just look at it this way. You are kind of whack.
I can be. I got this problem with authority and everyone knows it.
No,
and
that's what I tell him. I'm like, he was right. You're kind of whack.
That's on top.
Not you. You're not whack.
You're like Michael Rapaport for me, man. Hard body karate. That's how it is. Hey, in case you haven't already figured it out and not sure what the heck you clicked on, we are two dope teachers and a microphone, in the words of the immortal Boots Riley. And we're here with you on a Thursday. Is it evening or afternoon? I don't even know anymore. Like, we were
just afternoon. It's afternoon still.
It is.
4 o'clock. 4 o'clock.
Something like that. And we are coming at you. We're almost done with week 4 of remote teaching.
Week 4. Oh my gosh.
This 4 weeks is the longest year I've ever experienced.
It feels really long, but does it go fast for you? It feels like it goes fast.
It's fast and slow. You know what I'm saying? It's like, whoa, it's already week 4. You know, but then also, oh my gosh, it's only week 4. Like, I'm not sure how to, like, we were talking about postmodernism off mic earlier. Maybe it's that.
As we goes in that.
I don't know. It is week 4 of remote. We are back here on a hazy day. It's another day where we can't see the mountains in the state of Colorado. So that's fun. And we're coming at you, right? Coming at you 100 miles per hour. From our house.
100 miles per hour from the crib.
This is episode 67, and we're just trucking along, kind of getting things going. If you want to follow us, you can find us on Instagram at Two Dope Teachers. Twitter is where we tend to be the most active. We are over 6,000 followers. Take an aim on 7,000 at Two Dope Teachers. We're also on Facebook, Two Dope Teachers and a Mic. And you can also send us an email if you have a show idea or a suggestion or just want to tell us how much you love us, because all of us teachers need a whole lot of love right now. TwoDopeTeachers@gmail.com. How you doing, my brother?
You know, at sitting here Thursday week 4, it's better than Thursday week 1. I feel like I'm up and running. I feel like I'm vibing with my kids. Mm-hmm. I think most of my kids are vibing with me.
Okay.
I asked them after listening to Bettina Love's podcast the other day, and talking about trust, I decided to ask them a question. How many of them trust me? And of my sixth graders, I was around 71% said they trust me. I think I had 8%. I don't know. Now, you never know with poll everywhere how many responses you're getting. You can't see like how many people. I don't have the premium plan to go in and check all that. But 8% said no, which kind of bummed me out. But okay, I could deal with that. And then another like 11% said, not sure yet or something like that. I can't remember. I'm not a math teacher, so my percentages might be off. Don't at me.
Please at him. Please at him.
But so like I was feeling good, you know, I could deal with the not sure yet, you know, and these are sixth graders. They're new, they're fresh.
Yep.
But, you know, I felt like 71%, that's pretty good. That's where my numbers, you know, that's a good place to start. I know I can build on that.
Yep.
And then with my eighth graders, I was teetering between 88 and 85%.
Hey, nice.
Yes. I trust you. Nobody responding that they didn't trust. They felt like they didn't trust me. And then like, I think like maybe like 15% who were like still not sure. So feeling good, feeling like getting some feedback from my kids, you know, in a simple way, which I encourage all teachers to do because that's what we know.
Yep.
The customer is always right unless they're under 18 and you're a teacher, apparently. but that's a whole different story.
It is.
I feel like I'm doing good. I feel like I'm really digging teaching geography to the sixth graders.
Yeah.
I'm finding my love of maps again. And why maps and geography? I was always that kid who would look at the back of the social studies textbook and just study the maps and check them out. You know, I was one of those kids.
Nerd.
So nerd. I'm map nerd. What are you doing, map nerd?
Oh, look at Kevin. He's looking at the maps.
Hey, guys. Check out the gross domestic. They got gross domestic product charts back here.
Like, look.
Oh, wow.
Holy
Liechtenstein has a really high gross domestic product, but a very small population.
Hey, we are gangster nerds up in here. So I have a question for you in terms of – okay, now you get to hear my phone ring. So I have a question for you regarding Poll Everywhere. So you look at that 71-8-11 split. Okay, this is not how do you. How would I avoid obsessing over that 8%?
You got to – hey, you can't win them all. You don't win them all, you know. And hey, maybe I haven't earned that trust. And I think you should obsess about that 8%. You want to try to get that 8% to be like, hey, I got to do more to get you to trust me, right? And so how do I do that? You know, you're patient, you're compassionate, you're understanding, you reach out to them, you know, you hit kids up, you know, you joke with them, but you try to build that relationship. You know, how many people have you met in your life who are like, I didn't like you at first?
Hey, I feel personally attacked by that question.
That wasn't just you. Like, you know, we all have that.
Like everybody.
No, maybe some of us have more of those people than others.
Maybe some of us have only those people.
You're like, man, I never liked you.
And you're like, oh, that's, like, that's wait. Wait, that's it?
That's it? Oh, wait, okay.
I never liked you until or something. It's interesting because I think like one of the most challenging things about this work is how you feel like there's an expectation that you're meeting every kid's need every second of the day without fail, and that you're just universally respected. And like whenever that, like there's this whole conversation around student perception surveys, right? That on the one hand, I feel that student perception surveys are the most important part of my evaluation. I almost don't care about anything else. Like if students have a positive perception of me, then that's good. Type of individual who feels insecure and angry about those, right? But then there's this other conversation of like, well, mathematically though, if everybody is over 90%, then that's not really very good, right?
And, yeah.
And so there's that whole conversation that happens in our district, and you know, where there is literally a conversation of, well, X teacher is at 95%, but the district mean is 89%. So that's really not that good. You know?
Yeah.
And so I am the
Although the district mean is much lower than that.
Well, yeah, I mean that's true.
I think it's like at 75% through this district. I don't mean to flex on y'all, but we're two teachers, and watch, we'll come up low this year. But we tend to be We tend to be in the top of the top, tippity top, top.
Top of the tippity top.
In student perception.
That's right.
So I don't know.
That's right.
I don't know. I'm not trying to flex.
We ain't trying to flex at all. No, it's funny because like, and right now you've got the 71% and I won't even ask at this point.
Yeah.
I don't even want to know. No, it is interesting because I think that like, you know, Dr. Love, talks a lot about the importance of establishing a level of trust. And I think that becomes even more difficult when you like, so the second question I would have, if I got like, if I even had one kid who put on a poll everywhere that they don't trust me, like,
yep.
That would cut me really deep. That would really hurt me. But there would be two questions I would ask. The first question would be, is there something besides teaching that I might be good at? And then I'm not even kidding.
What, are you trying to get me to leave teaching?
No.
Man, I'm proud of my, see, dude, you were too much of a perfectionist. A 71%? A 71%? I'm see walking out the classroom.
71% is like a C. I guess
that's all right. That's why I'm see walking.
I'm see walking. You're dumb.
So, you get that?
So after I dug myself out of like my pool of self,
your hole.
Like out of my hole of self pity and realized, no, actually I have bills I need to pay. And I really like this. I really actually do love this job. The second question I would ask would be, is the lack of trust because of me? Is it because of freaking life? Is it because of school? Like, what is it that's kind of playing into that lack of trust? And I would, like, I wouldn't ask, obviously, but I would, I would start looking at my own sort of behaviors and then start trying to get to know the student to know, you know, not just like how I can get that student to trust me, but how that student interacts with ideas of trust to begin with, you know, like there are students who have just been.
Well, again, this is like remote learning. Like I don't have kid there, and I get that. Like I'm just a voice coming through a computer, right? And I'm, to be honest, I don't know, after 4 weeks there's any voice that I'd trust coming through the computer.
I mean, maybe
today, 42. When I was younger, I wasn't thinking like that, you know. But like given, like you said it, it's like, what's your previous experience, right, with teachers?
Yeah.
Right? Because I think all of our students come in with negative experience where teachers have told them one thing and then they turn around and act a different way.
Yeah.
Right. And again, these kids spend 45 minutes with me a day. It's been, how many days? 19 days. Yep. Right. And so I get it. Like I didn't think of it like this is, you know, a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, if you're there, give me a chance to earn your trust. I hope I haven't shut you down for the whole time.
Right.
Right. Maybe I have, maybe I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, again, maybe the kid didn't understand the question, but you know, I don't know. But, I think you have a lot of good points there about like how we see it all. But then asking the questions about it, but I don't even think it's about like whatever the rating is right now. I think it's about, what do you do to continue to build trust with students?
Yeah.
And you know,
like it makes me think of last year. Do you remember, like around this time last year, do you remember like going into a school building together? Like, do you remember going into a school building with a lot of people?
Do I remember going into a school?
Do you remember?
Do you remember when I used to go back to school? Yes.
Yeah.
I do remember.
Like when we used to go into the building and there's a lot of people there and we would like all sit together.
Yes.
Yeah. Good times. But like I remember
those were the days.
Now I got to shout out Matt Moore and Adam Maris from the Locked On Nuggets podcast. They were talking about, you know, the NBA, like this NBA season started like a year ago.
Like, yes, yes, yes.
And Matt's like to Adam, he's like, do you remember when we used to go to games? Like, do you remember? Like, and there
you actually could go to a game
and we make all this noise. You know, but so I remember last year kind of going into one of my opening week's spiels about, hey, it's really important that we have a good working relationship, that you feel supported by me, that you feel like you can talk to me about any issues you're having regarding this class or others, but you know, more with this class and so on and so forth. And then one of my ninth graders, and I think you'll know who it is, raise his hand. And I said, yeah. And he says, Mister, I don't like teachers. And
hey, he was honest with you. He was telling you right off the bat. He was like, you're a trigger.
That was, I mean, exactly. That you're a cop, you know? And ooh, that's a podcast for another day, right?
You're a cop. You're a cop.
Yep. Yeah, we're still getting like people angrily tweeting at us about like about the you might be a Karen if like that was wild.
Because there's a lot of Karen sensitivity that's been triggered.
Yeah,
which I'm like, thank God most Karens are white. Yeah. because if they weren't, if they were people of color, yeah. Oh my gosh, and this is breaking them down.
Yeah,
if this is breaking them down, yeah. Like you wouldn't last, right? You wouldn't last. So we get it. You're upset that we're associating. You think this is a racial attack. It's the same as the N-word.
Yep.
Until somebody has shown me a white woman being – I'm sorry, it's going to get a little graphic.
Oh, boy.
Hung from a tree.
Ah, bruh.
Right? Beaten, killed, thrown into rivers, knee on her neck, begging for her life.
Yep.
Don't at me with that it's the same as the N-word.
Yeah.
That word has been used – at every point when my people have been abused and killed at the hands of white people.
Yep. No, that's
Karen is an internet phenomenon. Yep. So yeah, don't even trip. Real talk.
Exactly. And that's so real because I think people, you know, they get in their feelings about this, and this is where false equivalency just really becomes a destructive force, right? It's kind of like, well, I got my feelings hurt just like Kevin got his feelings hurt when somebody called him the N-word. It's like, okay, see, you're going to have to see yourself out of this conversation.
You don't get it. You don't get it.
Hey, that's not where I was going though. Where I was going was, but thank you for that.
Sorry.
No, so
Karens are triggering.
Yes. Oh, bro. Like, yes. No, but the thing that, and I guess like I consider that to be a really, this is what's great about teaching like ninth graders. And I don't have ninth graders this year, and that makes me kind of sad a little bit. But the great thing about teaching ninth graders is that they'll bring you right down to earth. You'll come into this set with this whole set of lofty ideas. Like, I believe in relationship building and being culturally responsive and anti-racist. And you have all these ideas of like how you're going to explain like what you do to 14 and 15 year olds. And these 14 and 15 year olds are going to be like, yeah, you're a nerd, you know? And that kind of reminded me, it's kind of like, you know, and I think this young person is actually a very sophisticated thinker. And I think part of what he was saying was like, yo, I appreciate you saying this. I appreciate you like, you know, putting the effort out there. But I just want you to know that I have had my own experiences with teachers. So don't take it personal if I don't just like jump right on board with everything you're trying to tell me right now. And I think that was really important and humbling, you know? And it's like, walk the talk, but then walk the walk.
So true. So true. You know, like, I think that is what it's about, you know? And that's the relationship. That's it. And look, if you're a teacher, and I always get these types of teachers bother me where they're like, yo, every kid should be like, yo, you're the greatest. You're saving me. First of all, we take too much credit sometimes, right?
Yeah.
We take a lot of credit for stuff that like we had nothing to do with.
Right.
Sometimes it's mom and dad as to why this kid is perfect. You didn't do anything. Like now you're playing, oh, this kid did something special, you know? And a lot of times, you know, like the kids will let you know, the kids will tell you, the kids will be like, oh, I just do that because I know I got to do that with this teacher. And then the kids will let you know when you're real. And so like, that's why, like you always say, like Chuck D says, what's he say? Never let a win go to your head
or a loss
and never let a loss go to your heart. Right.
Never let a win get to your head or a loss to your heart. Yeah,
you know, but like that's it. It's like I remain humble with it. I try to. I ain't great. I ain't perfect at this thing. I'm struggling every day, especially nowadays.
Yeah,
you know, but I'm trying to get there. I'm trying to get there.
Yeah.
And my classroom doesn't look perfect. It's messy. But one thing I guarantee you is that I don't oppress students, right? Yeah. I don't try to push back on who they are. I let them be. Until today, when some kid, I put this thing, I was like, put something, I put in the Pear Deck, I was like, draw something or someone that makes you happy.
Oh, no.
And I got through all of them, you know, we're going through them. The last one's like, hi, your mom. And I was like, first of all.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't
laugh. Where you don't know where I come from.
Yeah.
So you don't talk about my mom.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll get on to kids. I've told them this before when they like get a mom. I'm like, you don't know.
Yeah.
In my neighborhood, you catch it.
That's actually
you don't know my mom.
That's
actually you don't know me. You don't know me. I'll lose my dang job.
Not too late.
Talk about my mama.
Yep.
Right? And I'm sure all the mamas who heard that in the background were like, yeah, you defend your mom. They shouldn't be talking. Who was that? Let me that you. Did you say something about that man's wife?
Oh, what if someone said something about me? I feel like this is an awesome episode because like two times you've said things that actually are pretty emotional and I've laughed. Only because I have a teenage child who like frequently when I try to ask questions, so how did you feel? Your mom. I'm like, all right, see, bro, like.
See, you're like, you don't know me. Like, you talk to your teenage daughter. You're like,
you don't know me like that.
She's like, actually, I do. It's my grandma.
I know. Yeah, like, yeah. Your mom is my grandma.
She's like my PIC, my partner in crime. Yes,
that's true. That's true. No, it's just interesting. Like, you know, you do have, you know, it's funny because I feel all right. So, you know, I got nuggets on the brain right now.
Tell the people why, in case they don't follow basketball, why you got nuggets on the brain. What's
Denver Nuggets, who Jeff Van Gundy described as the only team of the eight remaining teams at the time that did not deserve to be there, that he could not see winning a title.
Boo that man.
Well, so mathematically, if you're doing coin flips, your Denver Nuggets have a 25% chance of winning the NBA championship this year. You know why? Because the Clippers, that's right. Get those horns going. You know, it's built, not bought. And dude,
that's right.
I ordered a t-shirt. I was so excited from the DNVR. And it's a blue one that says Mile High City, but hand painted across it, it says Fraud City, because everybody keeps telling us that this is Fraud City. You know what? Yeah, Fraud City's coming for you. Fraud City is coming for you. And the only thing better than watching the Denver Nuggets take a 20-point lead on the vaunted LA Clippers in the fourth quarter was watching Paul George and Kawhi Leonard get dragged on social media. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
So I have Nuggets on the brain. I'm going to talk about this because this is where I think you and I are expressing, you know, a little bit of a difference here. I feel like you're Jamal Murray. Like you're Jamal because you recognize that it's not going to be perfect and you recognize that there are challenging situations. You might have an injury. You might be, you know, tasked with guarding the most dangerous player on the other team. And you're just going to throw a bunch of stuff out there and give your full effort and keep in mind the big picture, which is I'm doing my best right now and I'm going to keep on getting better. I'm like Michael Porter Jr. Yeah, you didn't think I was going there, did you? You didn't think that's where I was going.
You were going. I was like, wait.
Because let's review all of our favorite things about Michael Porter Jr. So I'm gonna read off of a tweet, and you can tell me if you see like where I'm coming from on this. So there was an amazing sequence in Game 6, maybe. He goes 0 for the game for 46 minutes. Then he makes the ultimate no, yes, three-pointer. Then he blocks a huge shot on Zubats late, grabs a key rebound, then starts talking stuff before he gets fouled and almost gets stripped and loses the ball from behind. Like, I relate to MPJ. Because wins absolutely go to my head. And losses absolutely get to my heart. Like, I do not follow Chuck D's advice. And I walk in.
I know you always saying it, but you're like, I don't follow it.
I don't follow it.
I've heard it.
I don't follow it. I think other people should follow it, but I don't succeed. And I'm 44 years old. And I think a lot of what I've decided I'm going to do in life is kind of set, you know, and how you approach things.
I don't know if this is changing.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing that I think MPJ and I have in common that I think maybe you'll agree with this. Number one, I have irrational confidence in my ability to teach children. Like, I think that I'm really engaging. I think that I'm really interesting. I think that I'm funny. I think I'm charismatic. I think that I can get them to give me the best of what they have on a given day. Now, what they have on a given day might not be a lot because of their difficult life situations. But I have irrational confidence that if I have to be the difference, I'll walk in and be the difference, right? Even if, like, my previous 19 lessons have been hot garbage, I'm going to keep on shooting, right?
You're like, I'm bound to hit.
Exactly.
That's what the greats do.
Like, I don't even remember the 19 misses. Like, and the second thing that I feel like I relate to with MPJ is that I learn from every single time that I get humiliated and things fall apart. Like, if I get dunked on in remote learning, I come back and I'm like, now I'm going to dunk on remote learning, right? Like, and I feel like I'm able to get better at it by taking risks, by embarrassing myself, and then coming back better. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I think you're way better than Michael Porter Jr. Like, maybe young Hera. Young Hera.
Yeah.
But bro, I get what you're saying. No, but that's like how you have to come at it, right? Yeah. You have to, and like, I love that idea about like, you have to take risks. You have to try something new.
Yep.
You have to keep going, knowing that it's going to blow up in your face, and keep pushing, especially in this remote learning. And that's why, like, you know, I showed off the Ed puzzle at the beginning of the year, cause I was using it a lot last year. And like I said, this week was the first time I've used it. Cause I was like, I want to go different. I want to approach it different.
Yep.
And I've been trying to do some stuff differently. But that's the truth, is you have to take risks. You have to try stuff. You have to put it out there and see what happens. You never know. Yeah. And that's why, like, I always think, you know, to young teachers, you'd always see when I was coming up, I'd see, and I guess they don't have these file cabinets anymore, right? They'd open up their file cabinet.
That's a Google Drive.
And be like, oh, unit one, unit two, unit three, unit four. Break.
Yep.
Unit five.
Yep.
They had everything.
Let's get
down to the like.
Go ahead.
At the end of the year, I was making copies to fill them up, so I'm ready to go. Yep. Same copies, just hand those out by day, right? But you never want to be that. That's how you get burnt out of teaching.
Yeah.
That's how you get burnt out.
Because it becomes a malaise, and you know, if your planning consists of making copies and like whiting out the dates. Like, that's definitely like, now I feel like the 21st century version of that's going to be that Google Drive, right? I'm going to share my whole
Google Drive. mine is so messy that I just restart. Like, I put like everything from like the year before to like, this is from that year. Put that aside.
Just dump it in there.
Start a new year.
I keep on playing.
And then every once.
Go ahead.
Every once in a while, I'll try to search for like something that I'll be like, oh, that was kind of cool. Let me find that and tweak it, you know?
Yep. Yeah. I just keep on paying for additional storage on Google because like, I could do that stuff, but man, that would take a lot of time. No, I mean, it's interesting to think of this whole, you know, and I have a couple of stories about how I got dunked on by remote learning the last 24 hours, 36 hours.
Yes.
And so I'm going to talk about that a little bit. But, you know, when I think about this work, I ask myself, would I rather be the teacher that does 100% of things like correctly at a 20% effort? Or do I want to be the teacher that's doing 50% of things correctly at 100% effort? Like, and I think I want to be the latter because I think that you learn more when things fall apart.
Yeah.
And I think that one thing that like, it's funny. Like, there are folks that ask me, well, how do you do it? How do you have these positive relationships with students? And, oh, I'm not you, that kind of like backhanded compliment and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Honestly think that the best thing that I do with students is, first, I listen to and I believe them. And second, like, I will completely cop to my mistakes. I'll be like, this is not working and I'm feeling frustrated, or I clearly didn't do the things, you know, that I needed to do, and I didn't take care of business. So let me take care of business a little bit. And I really think that they know that the effort is always there with me, you know?
Yep. Yeah. No, they believe it, you know? And I think that's always the interesting thing. I think working with middle schoolers, I think a lot of times they don't understand why I do the things that I do.
Yeah.
Right. Until maybe later on.
Yep.
Like later on, I have them come back and they're like, I used to love your class, mister.
Yep.
I was like, do you remember how you used to act?
I had.
They're like, mister, I love you. The kids would walk by my class. They're like, I miss this classroom.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I had a similar experience with, you know, there's a family that's been sending their kids to our school for a really long time. And I remember one of the siblings recounting to me an argument that they had with the younger sibling, where the younger sibling's like, Mr. Munoz thinks he's the best. And then the older sibling was like, what are you talking about? You literally just said that Mr. Munoz is the best. And to which the younger sibling says, yeah, but you ain't got to act like it.
That's right. There you go. But you ain't got to act like it. You're acting like you're the best. That's how young. That's how the youngins are. They tell you.
That's how they are.
They're funny.
All right. Well,
they're so.
Well, we
great.
Spent a lot of time on this introduction. There's a lot on our mind. Like I find that I look forward to these conversations because this is really hard, and I don't even know how. Like, people are like, "How's your teaching going?" I'm like, "I don't know." Like, I think it's
fine. Right. How's the teaching going?
But I don't have any way of knowing.
My teaching's all right. The tech support is struggling.
Tech support is struggling.
my tech support? I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to make it.
I don't know if we're going to do this. So what we got next, now that we're done kind of like venting the things that are happening in our lives?
Well, last Thursday night, a week from tonight, a week ago tonight, about a week ago. Stop.
Right.
See, stop. A week ago tonight, something controversial happened in the United States that hadn't happened. We were surprised that it happened.
Yeah.
The NFL season started back.
That was.
And you know, all due respect, I love Nessa. I love Cap. I respect Cap. What he's done. Yep. You know, I think he's impressive. I was never a big Kaepernick fan as a football player per se, but it all shifted. My perspectives of him changed when he decided to take a knee and for Black Lives during the national anthem, after based on the advice that he was given from a Marine, right, to express his right. And I know there's a lot of people in this country who don't believe he has a right to do this, but to express his right that we all have guaranteed. I know freedom of speech is tended, that First Amendment tends to protect white supremacists.
Yep.
It consistently does. ACL, I'm looking at you.
Yep.
But on the real, like, I respect what he did. He changed the game. He changed the conversation. He took it on. He, you know, 45 has called him all sorts of name, him and all of his fellow NFL players, his brothers who stood in solidarity with him, who stood in solidarity with Black Lives, you know, who helped to influence the dialogue in this country around the value of Black Lives. Right. And I think it wasn't ironic because, you know, the NFL is made up predominantly of black men.
Yep.
Right. They're making millions of dollars. Right. The $1 million slave. Right. Yep. And I can't remember. Pardon me. I can't remember the brother's name who wrote the book. But again, we know what they treat him.
William C. Roden.
William C. Roden. Yes. Read that book. Yes. Yep. Yeah. But, you know, just thinking about it all, you know, and I have not boycotted. I'll go ahead and admit, call me what you want. I haven't boycotted the NFL.
I feel like you keep telling people and not to, like, at you, and I feel like you're adding people.
I that's all right. I don't care. That's how I live my life. That's how I live my life. But you know, but, like, I watch the NFL.
Yes, you do.
And partly because, like, I grew up when I was a kid and I never watched the NFL. I didn't like football. My dad is a football fanatic. Yep. He's grown up. He was a boy who grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. Loved football. Played it in college. Mm. Loved football. People all of his life have always assumed he's a football player because he's 6'2" and he's black and he has money. Yep. And so whenever they see him, what team did you play for? You know, so my dad, depending on his mood, he might lie. He'd be like, I was with the Seahawks.
Played for the Falcons.
And then I was with the Cowboys. You don't remember me playing for the Falcons, right? But again, my dad had a love of football. And so as I've gotten older, I finally started watching the NFL. And it's one of the things that me and my dad have connected with. My dad had some season tickets that I shared with him for a while. So I'd go to the games and stuff. And, you know, I've always been the type that you know, I've been called out at a graduation. I don't know if I've ever told you this story. I was at a graduation at Maury, and they said the Pledge of Allegiance. And I didn't salute, you know, I didn't salute the flag. I didn't put my hand in my chest. I did stand up, you know, because I'm up on stage, and I'm just like, I don't want to make a scene. But this guy comes up, and he called me out. Why didn't you salute the flag? Mm. Why didn't you salute the flag? You know, and, like, I was taken back. I was like, it's none of your business why I didn't salute the flag, right? Like, I stood up. I was being respectful, I thought, you know. But I think it goes back to this idea about questioning the way black people's patriotism in this country, right? Which has always been claimed when we have been down, you know, and I'm teaching my students this week, my U.S. history students, the first life that was given, the first blood that was shed for this American Revolution was a black man, Crispus Attucks, right? Most people don't understand that. And this is what we mean by the narrative is jacked up, right? But thinking about the NFL and knowing that I watch it, you know, I say all of that to say this. Brother, given that they played the Black National Anthem at the kickoff of every game of this season, so they honored black people. And y'all need to check out the Black National Anthem if you don't know. We know yours. You don't know ours. Okay. So they play the Black National Anthem. They're now supporting players' rights to express themselves. Some players kneeled. Some players, I think last Thursday night, both teams didn't even come out during the National Anthem, right? So the NFL has changed some of its tune around it. They've settled with Brother Cap, right? He's taking somebody. So we were gonna reframe this idea as let's debate this. Will you consider coming back to the NFL? I know you grew up on the east side of Denver, and you can't help but grow up on the east side of Denver and having a couple of true loves. And one of which I know is them Denver Broncos. Denver Broncos.
I mean,
how many Sundays did you spend watching?
I mean, I'll tell you.
Going out.
It's interesting because, you know, we've not talked about this. Like there are times when you'll make a reference to the Bronco game and I'm just kind of like, yeah, I can't relate. You know, and you know, because I've been pretty vocal in my boycott of the NFL, starting with the blackballing of Kaepernick, but also related to, you know, the unchecked domestic abuse incidents that happen, you know.
True that. The thing with
Ben Roethlisberger is just something that I just have a really hard time forgiving because, like,
I have a hard time watching him.
And I don't want to trigger a bunch of listeners, but you know, Michael Vick and Ben Roethlisberger were both implicated in violent acts. Only one of them went to jail and was booted out of the NFL. And so these are things that I think are, you know, these are difficult, and it kind of points to this kind of cultural problem from the league. I also have some concerns about TBI and, you know, sort of, you know,
my soccer concussion. Yeah, real
and,
talk.
You know, as a former soccer player who suffered concussions, I'm just kind of like, whoa, this is like wild stuff. But it's funny because our paths of fandom are totally different. Like I grew up watching the Broncos. Like I have a theory.
I have a theory
that John Elway gave me the drive for my birthday because the drive happened on January 11th, 1987. That was the day I was in the mountains celebrating my birthday. And I remember driving down in my dad's truck with a whole bunch of my friends, listening to the game on the radio in total disbelief that the Broncos were actually about to do this. And
all of you Bronco fans, you better thank him. Send him thanks.
And then,
and $1 and each. Everybody send him $1 each.
And then I remember 1998 and 99. I remember exactly where I watched the Broncos' first Super Bowl win with my dear friend Jeremy in high school. And I watched it at their house, and his mother, she's since passed away of cancer. But like, you know, they won it and they paid tribute to her because she was a lifelong fan. And I remember where I was.
Oh wow! That's
I remember where not they meaning the family, not the Broncos. My bad.
Oh okay.
And
oh wow!
You
like,
know,
wow.
so it's and I own a Peyton Manning jersey. Like this is not a brand new development, you know. But it's fairly recent. And so the difficulty I have, I mean, would I consider like coming back? Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff that's kind of hard, man. Like, it's hard to engage a lot of men in casual conversations if you don't watch football. Like,
that's true. That's what I learned. I was like, oh my gosh, I could just have small talk with dudes. That doesn't matter.
But let me ask you something. So, you know me, man. I'm a fundamentalist. Like, I take things to the extreme. Like, if you tell me student voice, I'm like, students should run their own school. Like, you know,
let's go.
So I struggle to not carry every single belief I have to its logical conclusion, even if that logical conclusion is untenable and like really maybe not that great of an idea to begin with, you know, like, and you ask students, you're like, students, would you want to run a school? Like, I think that's a great idea. And the students are like, bro, I want to enjoy high school. Like, I don't want to be in IOP meetings all the time. Like,
I don't want all that.
Like, I know you might like the idea of me wanting all that, but I don't want all that. So my issue, and this is impossible for me because like, my issue with the NFL is like, well, if there's this stuff, then I just can't under any circumstances, consume this sport. So that's hard.
Yep. That's the hard part, you know, and even like me thinking about it, because like, granted, like the NFL settled with Cap, but if you follow the stories, Cap is like, hey, Eric Reed is still out here and he is a free agent, right? And nobody's signing him, right? And he was one of the people who stood in solidarity first with Cap and was rocking with him and has rocked with him hard body.
Well, also Brandon stuff. Marshall from the Broncos linebacker, didn't he like end up paying a pretty heavy consequence for his support?
Yeah. And so you start to, you know, you have questions and then you add the TBI, you add the domestic violence. You add all the other stuff, you know, even when you look at who a lot of the owners of the NFL teams are, like they are really some negative people, right? Like they're, and again, why aren't you making move? There needs to be a black owned NFL team. I think it changes when we're sitting at the table. You have to talk a little bit different about everything. Yeah. You know, and Jay, even Jay, has faced criticism, you know, for his role in the NFL. And so, like, I get what you're saying about, like, it's tough. Do you come back? And you know, every time I turn it on and watch it, I notice, like I said, I've never been, like, super big, but, like, I like, maybe about 10 years ago, really started to get in it in the Peyton days. You know, watched every game when he was playing, really got into it. And then, like, as time has gone on, though, it's kind of waned, right? And so I won't watch as much, won't get as much into it.
Frankly, it's like hard to have the time.
Yeah, it is. It is a big time commitment for a football game. Although it's not as long as a baseball game. The best time commitment for sports is beautiful game. Like it's so efficient. It is so efficient. You're like,
it's about 90 minutes, and then there's a 15-minute halftime, and that's it. And you know,
that's it. Back to your day. It's over. It's great. It is so great. You know, but you know, a baseball game. Oh God. But there is something about the NFL. But I think you do have to ask those questions. But another thing I think about, you know, that I think, shoot.
Should I say this as controversial as I texted? The NFL
about done as much to elevate brothers from poverty as HBCUs. Mm. Okay. I'm sorry. I know some people might think it's controversial. Brothers from the South.
Yeah.
Brothers who grew up in real spots, who didn't have much of an opportunity and who are put on all their people when they get on, right? And I think there's also some of this, you know, that's where the racism comes from, right? Is that they see that these are brothers who are getting paid, and nowadays these brothers aren't acting like the brothers did 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago when we were growing up, you know, who were the NFL stars. You know, I just watched The Last Dance, you know, with Jordan. And when they talk about, you know, when Jordan makes his comment, Republicans buy sneakers too, right? You know, and so, like, you think about that and how athletes have changed. And then, you know, you think about LeBron and all the shut up and dribble comments and stuff like that. You know, who LeBron has been and how LeBron stands up. And you just think about how times have changed. And I think, I don't know if a boycott of the NFL is the answer. But I get why people are still going to engage in it, you know. And
well,
so
that was one.
I mean, I'd love to be able to talk about a Bronco game with you because you have like the hottest sports team of anybody. Like when you retire, please become like a sports radio dude. Please become like an ESPN analyst.
Like, I could be like
telling you. You guys don't even know this guy is like sports takes for days, like on every sport. I've never heard you like talk baseball.
Well, I stopped watching baseball like 15 years ago, I think.
Yeah, I've never heard you talk. I've never heard you break down.
It was super exciting
baseball
when the Rockies made their run in the World Series, but then I ended up watching it with my friend Sean, who's a freaking Red Sox fan, and I felt like that experience was so demoralizing and emasculating that I was just like, screw it, I'm not watching baseball ever again. And just to put a bow on what you're just saying, like I watched Nuggets games twice, like,
I know you do.
Like I have like three different text conversations going with like my fellow basketball fans. And I'm like, I just watched the final 19 minutes. And did you know that the Nuggets defensive rating for those last 19 minutes, you know, so I really.
I love the live stat.
The live stats, and then I go through this emotional roller coaster where it's like we're gonna win this, and it's like I'm gonna go jump onto I-70 right now.
Like, you live and die for the team. You live and die for your teams. You know, you like, and that's what I mean. That's what's telling about your boycott, right? Because you're not like you're not a person like me. I'm the type of person that like, if I had an excuse, I'd be like, okay, I'm not watching, right? And like I said, I really do watch because it is something that I've been able to bond with my dad with that, like, and I think I missed that opportunity, right. You know, and life is too short. Yeah. We never know. And I think it's just something fun to talk about, even when the Broncos are lousy and we both think they're lousy. It's something we could do. We go and sit at the game with each other and leave our wives at home and just, you know, eat peanuts and talk trash.
Oh, you know? See that. This is one of the most persuasive arguments you've made yet. I was just going to say on kind of a serious note, and I know a lot of people tune in thinking that this is an educational podcast, 112th on the educational podcast rankings.
That's probably why, because we have.
But I'm starting to think about, like, you know me, man. Every aspect of my life cross pollinates another one, right? Like I was just talking about how I'm the MPJ of the classroom, you know, of the remote classroom. Yep. Maybe not of the actual classroom, but of the remote.
Classroom.
And so, like, the for me, everything is a full, like, spiritual and intellectual experience. Like, I'm a nerd and I like embrace that. And so a couple of things that you said to me are resonating with me in a cultural and political way. The first thing is that I feel like there's a lot of us who identify as progressives who take these really high and mighty, like, positions. Like a few years ago, I was doing a camp with some coaches, and one of the coaches is a vegan. And, like, you know, there was one of the kids in the camp, their dad, this was an African American kid. And there's not a lot of black kids in soccer. And so, you know, for me, I just got excited because I'm kind of like, man, like, I would love to have soccer be more representative of this country, you know? So after the camp, Dad came up and handed his son some Burger King, and the kid was so excited. Yeah. And the kid holds out, like, some fries to this coach and says, "Hey, do you want some fries?" And this was an opportunity for that coach to say, "Hey, you know what? I would love it. I'm not feeling that well, so I probably shouldn't eat some fries. But you go ahead and enjoy them, like, whatever." Instead, the coach is like, "Well, I'm a vegan. And I just don't believe in eating that stuff," and gave this kid a whole lecture about fast food and about meat and about all that in front of this young man's father. Like, you just completely beat down, like, a very simple thing that this dad was trying to do for his kid because you had an ideology you needed to like preserve. And so when you talked about how the importance of football in the South, and, like, not just everybody in the South, but specifically as it has meaning for black communities in the South, like, that resonated with me. That's like, yeah, you know what? Like, there are things that we can look at from our own kind of high and mighty political positions. But if we aren't actually spending time, like, listening to why other people love these things, then what we're doing is we're furthering a political divide. And it makes me think of Jeff Duncan Andrade's book, What a Coach Can Teach a Teacher. When he talks about how coaches, you know, in what coaches can teach teachers is that there's a culture among young people and there's a culture among people of color. So in the same way that you would never, like, just badmouth the NFL in a predominantly black gathering in the South, like, you also should not badmouth, like, reggaeton in a room full of Latinx kids, you know? You might think it sounds terrible. You might think that the auto-tune might give you aneurysms, but you have to, like, put yourself in that position and be like, well, why does this mean something to you? And then the other thing that I find kind of persuasive is when you talk about kind of the state of the NFL's relationship to the Black Lives Matter movement and black people in general. And like, the question is, do we further cancel culture, even when leagues take steps? Now, could the NFL take bigger steps? Probably. Are the majority of NBA owners, for example, probably still Republicans? Probably. I mean, position is becoming more and more untenable in the NBA because it's a different type of league, which is why it's my favorite league. But I mean, if we think that NBA owners are all like Green Party, like socialists who are going to do income distribution and vote the way we want them to in November. I think we're being kind of naive. But I think it's interesting to think about like, well, okay, so we put this league on blast. Cap never said this was about trying to get on an NFL team. Like he always said, this was about a principle, and I understood that I could lose my career. Cap went into this whole thing with his eyes wide open, right? Like, and I think that's why I have a lot of admiration for his protest, because he's basically said, I don't need you to invite me for a fake tryout. Like, I don't need to be on the team for fake reasons. Yeah. Like, I knew that this could happen, and I did it. And that's never been one of his demands, is put me on a team. And the fact that he continues to stand for Eric Reed, I think is a really important thing. So, I mean, it's interesting that like what you've said to me kind of makes me realize that I need to check back in with a lot of my positions, right? Like check in. Hey, so where are we at with this? Like, and like, does it mean anything to me anymore? And then I think the last thing, I think for men of color in particular, and I, you know, this might be a naive thing to say. I know there are a lot of women of color who, partake in sports with, their family members. But I think for so many of us were frankly raised by traumatized men, right? And building a meaningful relationship with older men of color is hard. It's hard because we talk from behind walls. It's hard because sometimes our own trauma with younger men of color. And you and I are in our 40s. So we're kind of like in between. We're older men to some and younger men to others. Right. And I think that in a moment, like I think about my own dad, my own dad, and I, like, I love my dad. My dad, like the stuff my dad went through to come to this country and like raise his kids here, that's stuff that I can't even fathom, like what he came from, right? And when my dad calls me and we're talking and he's like, hey, what about the Broncos? And I'm like, I don't really watch football anymore, Dad. Like, I feel like that makes him really sad. I feel like, well, that's one thing we used to talk about. And we don't talk about a lot of other things, you know? So I need to stuff.
I think, you know, it's interesting the way it plays out, and like, thank, like when you mention like those kind of cultural aspects of it all, like I don't think about it, but when you talk about it, like that was my childhood. Yeah. And so like that was all the men around me. My cousin played at Wake Forest, played all his life. My other two cousins played, my Uncle Derek's boys, JB and Rashad, they played, my cousin Riley played, you know, they all played through college, right? My cousin Riley had an NFL dream, tried to play for the Buffalo Bills, moved around, played some arena football, is still coaching right now up in Green Bay, you know, but it really, and it's all about like just hearing you talk about it, like just brings it all back home, you know, even my granddaddy, you know, my granddaddy called me Champoo because he was like, I was the first boy child. And he's like, you're going to be a football player. Because the Atlanta Falcons were probably one of the first words that probably came out of my Steve Barkowski, Atlanta Falcons, something like that.
Quarterback. That
probably,
quarterback.
You know, but like, it really is interesting. And I don't think people always see it. And you know, where you don't see the boycott as much, and I'm not saying it's not in the South, right? Yeah. But there's less of it, right? Because I think what the NFL means a lot. It means as much as the NBA, you know. Whereas like some kids who grow up, you grow up in New York, or you grow up in say, you know, Baltimore, or even LA, Chicago, or you know, other parts of this country. Like Chicago, being in the NBA is it, right? If you grow up anywhere in the Southeast, and being a football player, an NFL player is huge. It is huge. It's what motivates kids. You know, a Friday night, high school. Saturday night, college. Sunday, NFL.
That's like the progression, right?
That is exactly what happens. That's exactly what happens.
And I think a lot of it, like, it's funny because, like, me and you, we love hip hop, right? And we recognize that hip hop can be problematic, right? But what happens?
Most definitely.
What happens when people come at hip hop? Like, and we're in the room. We do.
And we defend it. We defend it. I'm going to defend hip hop till the day that I die, right? You know, now I can attack hip hop. Yep. I can criticize it, right? But other people can't, because hip hop is family to me. Hip hop raised me.
And I think when people criticize hip hop, particularly, you know, sort of the left of center liberal white crowd, when they criticize hip hop, the thing I react to isn't that I think they're wrong about some of the issues that are expressed in hip hop music. Sometimes what I get upset about is I'm like, y'all even listen to hip hop? Like you don't want to listen to it. You've cherry picked some like really bad lyrics from someone, and you've decided that you're going to indict the cultural, social, political, and spiritual values of an entire community of people. And you're not even a part of the nation. Like, you know, and so I think like it's the same sort of principle. Like when I start, like, it's funny, you know, when I've worn my Kaepernick t-shirt on Justice Monday, like around the NFL season, the kids are like, oh, you're a 49ers fan? And I'm like, that's no, right. But then it also speaks to me in this way that, you know, as teachers, we do have to be kind of accepting of the things that students value if we expect to build positive relationships. I mean, it's so funny. This like kind of came full circle.
You see how we did that? Just you like see we how we did up. That? That's what we call masterful
just
production.
Just like we drew it up. You know? So you got me rethinking it. I feel like it would be too easy to just be to just like make a decision right now. I think you're going to have to get at us on Twitter and on Instagram. Let us know what you think about this conversation. But brother, I thank you for bringing this other like sort of wrinkle to it. Like you got me really rethinking it. I have my points all lined up, and now thinking about, you know, culture and society and politics and how those all interact differently for all of
them. Your pops.
It's all about your pops. And male identity. and male.
It's all about
like
male
like,
identity.
I can sit
it
here
is.
And it's- try to lecture my father about Black Lives Matter and about what the protest is really about and why I consider this to be an important move to make. But my dad is like not a young man anymore. He is like, he's going to believe what he's going to believe. And the things that make sense to him, he will continue to do. And the things that don't make sense to him, he'll be like, okay, I won't ask you about football anymore. Like, you know? So it comes down to the whole thing is like, when it comes to the close, intimate relationships in our lives, do we expect people to just be what we want them to be? Or do we recognize, like, do we have to give a little when we're trying to cultivate important relationships? And for men of color, I think that's a really hard question.
Yep. And I think that's what our students go through, right? I mean, we always talk about this idea of like the students who are like, you know, you put your meme mug on, right? I can't be seen cozied up to Mr. Adams. I can't be seen cozied up to Mr. Munoz. They will be calling me map nerd. even though I like the map, have you seen the GDP of Angola? Why is Angola's GDP so high? They must have oil. Oh, ooh, they do. Look
Are
at
you
the resource map.
Textbook? This is wild. No, I mean, yeah, and I think when it comes to building those relationships, it really is important to, you know, kind of, you know, to sort of accept these young brothers on their terms, right? And to give a little and maybe don't be so principled and so dogmatic when it comes to like, you know, understanding your students and building that trust. And maybe I'll start watching the NFL. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Possibly. We'll see. I'd love to get your pop. sports take.
Yo, if you want to follow us, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. You can also find us on Anchor Podcasts as well. You can support us on Anchor, $4.99 a month. We'll get you a shout out. So shout out to Bram Hubble, who is our supporter right now on Anchor. It's wonderful stuff.
Shout out, Bram.
So, and the other thing we want to ask you to do is if you like what you're getting on Two Dope Teachers and a Mic, please go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, and and tell people and just help people find the work that we're doing. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Dope Teachers is our handle. And you can also email us, twodopeteachersandamic@gmail.com. We are on Facebook. Facebook.com/TwoDopeTeachersAndAMic. And we're going to stay out here. Am I right, my brother? We're going to stay out
here. That's it.
So we hope you
have That's it.
We ain't going nowhere. Like, definitely not until October. And that will be a whole other thing. Hey, so we have some cool guests coming up in future podcasts. So please stay tuned to social media. And we will be talking a little bit about that. For Kevin Adams, I am Gerardo Munoz, and I am asking you on a hazy, smoky, quarantine-y, remote teaching-y day to just, like, sun up to sun down, COVID to vaccine. Just make sure that you always, Kev,
stay dope.
Dope, y'all. Stay dope.
Stay dope.
Stay dope, y'all. Stay dope.